I'd like to follow through with that. In a sense, I answered that question, but I'm going to have another go. I think it's important over the next 4 years that we do mark dates that are significant to the anti-war process in the First World War. We had this last year a very, very good marking of the 15th of May, which is Conscientious Objector Day. It's going to be marked every year, I think, through the war commemoration period and beyond. If there's a commemoration event happening in your part of the world, get involved. 15th of May is very important for raising the whole question of conscientious objectors. I think it's also important that local groups, as I said earlier on, get involved in campaigns that are war-related. There's a Derby People's History Group campaigning very vigorously for a pardon for Alice Wheeldon and her family. Alice Wheeldon, you remember, was the woman who was accused of being involved in a plot to murder Lloyd George by poisoning him. A complete fabrication. She spent time in prison. Her health was broken. She died shortly afterwards. She and her descendants need to be given support. So if you've come across the Derby People's History Group or across the Alice Wheeldon campaign, do give it your support. And speaking more personally, next year, or 2016, is the centenary of the introduction of conscription. There are those of us who are beginning to start talking about 2016 as a year of conscience. And I think it would be good if we can think around 2016 as a whole series of commemorations of that process, and we're going to have one here clearly in York. Thank you.
Just a couple of points. The first is, a note of caution. Now, I thought that the 1,400-strong human poppy at GCHQ last week was utterly vacuous. It was very expensive. It cost probably 20, 30, 40 times what we've spent today. And I also think that the 800,000 or so ceramic poppies at the Tower of London were equally vacuous, as will be the scattering of poppy seeds, which is part of the government commemoration towards the end of the war. The government wants to send at least one school student from every school in the country to the graves in northern France. Now, I've been there. There's nothing wrong with that per se, but you could wander about there for the rest of your life and you actually don't learn much about why this war happened. But we need to be careful. We need to avoid offending people. There is no doubt that many ordinary people will take part in these events and they'll talk about poignancy, they will feel sad and all kinds of things. There's nothing wrong with that, and we've got to be careful in attacking those individual commemorations. What we need to do, which just takes a little bit longer, is to set those commemorations within a broader context. And when you add up what the government is proposing to do over the next 4 years, it's a carnival of inanity. It really is, and we need to point that. We need to point that out and offer something else. Now, which is why we had this event today. Just another point. I think we need to take the opportunity when we see stuff in the press, local radio, our local museum, or whatever it is that we think is inadequate in that way, but we need to point out facts, simple facts, which people don't know about. And I'm going to give you one example. There was a British naval blockade of Germany throughout the 4 years of the war, and it continued for several months after the war, after the armistice with Germany. In the course of that, this blockade killed, through starvation, as many as 700,000 German civilians. Now, not many people know that. They should know about it, because it's something that cannot be spun as heroic, and it puts a very different complexion on this war.
Yeah, I think one thing that perhaps we ought to note is that the nature of what the government has been arguing has already changed, and it's already changed in response to a popular opinion, which wasn't what the government thought it would get. If you remember, when this was launched, one of the key figures pushing it for the government was Michael Gove. And Michael Gove had a very, very hard-line kind of pro-imperial stance. He was indeed the leading neoconservative in the current government. He's a massively pro-Zionist figure. And actually, what they found when they started attacking Blackadder and all the rest of it is that they got a response that they didn't expect. Gove, mainly to do with the activities of teachers, is gone. But he's gone partly because he made a catastrophic mistake about the way he pitched the World War I commemorations and had to be hauled back and told off by Downing Street. Now, that's an important lesson. It means if we challenge the way the commemoration is being argued, if we come up with analyses which are better historically, more in tune with what people really know was the truth about the First World War, the government can be challenged, and indeed ministers can be defeated over this. And I think that's an important lesson for us. That obviously rests on events like this and the kind of things that I think very good ideas that come out from the panel so far to keep that forward, have an alternative commemoration process going. And let's be clear, the government's task is past its easiest point. Its easiest point was the outbreak of war and the patriotic hysteria which accompanied it. From now on, the actual history of the war gets much, much more difficult. What are they going to do about the Easter Rising in 1916? I know what we should be doing about making that an important point of commemoration. What are they going to do about this increasingly disastrous meat grinder on the Western Front? What are they going to be saying about that? What are they going to be saying about the fact that workers may have marched to war under the national flag in 1914, but they pulled down practically every crown head in Europe at the end of the war and marched out of the war under the Republican flag and the red flag, much harder to commemorate in 1917 and 1918. So I think that we've got an important task to play in that. But I end with this point. The commemoration that really matters is the construction of an anti-war movement which makes sure that this generation doesn't pile any more corpses on top of the huge mountain of corpses produced in a previous generation. That, in the end, is the monument that really matters. It was the great Marxist critic, Walter Benjamin, that said, "Even the dead will not be safe if the enemy continues to win." And that is very profoundly true. If they continue to win, they will not only rewrite the history, but the death and destruction will continue.
Stop the War Coalition this year, we produced a pamphlet called No Glory, which has been our best-selling pamphlet, and you can get them over there. Thanks for the plug. And it's been the bestseller because people really want to know what happened with the war and really want to know what was going on. And I agree very much with all the points that people have made, that there are various things and people we can commemorate over the next 4 years, and we should do everything that we can to do so. But I just want to focus here on one particular aspect of this, and I take on board very much what Steve says, we've got to be sensitive about how we do it. But I must say, I have been absolutely sickened in recent years, and particularly this year, with the promotion of the red poppy in the most militaristic way. I was in Paddington Station in London this week on Thursday. It was like a military coup's taken place. You know, you've got loads and loads of people in uniform selling red poppies. You've got Joanna Lumley every 5 minutes coming over the tannoy saying, "Will you buy one?" You've got all these things. I wrote an article for The Independent saying why I would wear a white poppy and not a red one, and saying that they're using the unpopularity of... They recognise the unpopularity of present wars, and they're using the red poppy in order to gain support for the military. That's what it's all about. Most people who die these days don't die... that aren't military, the people who die in wars, they're civilians. None of these people are given any possibility at all. Now, I think it is absolutely sickening what is going on here. The BBC demands that everybody wears a red poppy if they go on. This starts earlier and earlier every year. It's been going on for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I think it is very, very important that we say we want to respect the dead, we want to honour the dead, but we do it by campaigning against war and for peace. And that is why I think the white poppy, over the next few years, again, we've had huge demand for white poppies in our office. In fact, we've run out of supplies of them, so we can't get them to people at the speed that we want to do them. Thousands of people are contacting us saying, can we get a white poppy, because they do not want this militarism to go on. And it seems to me the next 4 years we can campaign over conscription, we can campaign over the Battle of the Somme, we can campaign over all these things. But I think we should, but also let us start challenging this militaristic narrative of what the war is supposed to be about. It is part and parcel of their failure to win the argument over that this is a war for democracy and small nations. They haven't totally won that argument, and this is why they're using it as you must support the troops. So I think it's very, very important we take that stand. I'm very pleased so many people are wearing white poppies today, and I think it's something we need to build as a bigger and bigger campaign over the next 4 years.
Okay, I think you might possibly expect an English literature lecturer to say something like this, but in order to avoid offending people in terms of commemorations, I think one thing we really could do is use culture. I think cultural products like films, poetry, TV, literature, I think can be really central to the alternative view of the commemorations. Michael Gove attacked Blackadder because, you know, a bit wrongly saying that it was, you know, used as some kind of Urd text for history teachers. It's not. But, but it, nevertheless, it's a really powerful and effective way to get across a certain view of the war to people who might possibly be offended if you say, you know, don't wear that red poppy because the X, Y, and Z. So I think maybe using culture is a really important aspect of that. I think, you know, reading the war poets is really important. And I think not just reading the British war poets, to slightly repeat the argument I made earlier, I think actually seeking beyond the war poets that are British to the French war poets, the German war poets, the Russian war poets, the Australian female war poets. There's a poetry collection over there by Penguin, and someone pointed out to me that it's got three female poets in it. That's it. A 200-page book or something like that. The Oxford University edition is similar. Thank you very much, Judith. So I think we need to use culture, but we need to avoid, when we do that, having this kind of narrow British nationalistic focus, even if we're using it in an anti-war way. And also, I would say the No Glory in War website published in August a poem every day from around the world. There's an International World War One Poetry Month. Those poems are still there on that website, so you can go on the website, you can share that poetry on social media, and I think that could be a really effective tool to discuss the fact this was a global conflict, it was an imperial conflict, it wasn't just this kind of skirmish on the Western Front.
I live in Scotland, and there's a discussion about George Square. George Square is the big square just in front of the station in Glasgow. And it's an interesting place because in January 1919, just after the war had finished, there was a huge strike of engineers. 40 hours, it was to get a 40-hour week, because they'd been working incredibly long hours. And the British tanks were sent in. The government sent in the tanks. That revealed the true nature of what the war was about. It wasn't for this country, since they were sending in tanks against their own people. And recently there's been a discussion about what sort of statues should we have, because they're replanning the square. And so I think one way to commemorate the First World War would be to take down, because it's full of generals. Sitting on horses, standing up like this, it's just full of them. Take them all away, put in John McClane, the British, the Bolshevik consul, the most prominent anti-war campaigner in this country. Nan Barber, she was a woman who led the red strikes in Glasgow and brought in red restrictions that we all enjoy across the country today. Rosa Luxemburg, the leading German one, and since Lenin's statues are a bit tricky these days, Leon Trotsky, standing there.
Thanks very much to the panel, and what brilliant ideas have come out, I think, from the panel. We haven't got time to open it up to a general discussion, I'm afraid, because a little bit of housekeeping still to attend to, but I just want to say a collective thanks to all the panel for a very creative and interesting session. Thank you very much. Well done. Now, I just need to introduce Steve again, who's going to say some important things about how this event came together.
Well, Art Mar or something along those lines.
Now, really, I'd like to thank everyone for coming. I don't know what was the score in the end, Hazel? 105, I think.
It must have been over 100.
Yeah, people came. That was as many as we might have expected, or more than we might have expected. And I hope everybody had at least an interesting day, if not actually an enjoyable one. There was some levity crept in which is good. I'd like to thank the contributors, and this is in no particular order: Lindsay, John Rees, Donnie, Cyril, Charlie, Chris, Owen, John Westmoreland, and Paul with Martin and Pete. I think they did a fantastic job. Obviously, as one of the contributors myself, I could only go to two other sessions, but they were great, and I heard great things about all the others. It was fantastic participation, great questions, and so on. I couldn't have, you know, when I put this thing together in the first place, I couldn't have expected more than that. Really, it was kind of what I had in mind, and even better than that. I'd like to thank York TUC and the History Workshop Journal for their financial support. I'd like to thank York Against the War for underwriting the whole event, and I hope we haven't. I don't know why I'm laughing at it. It's a nervous laugh. I hope they've left their coffers too depleted, but I think we'll recover. Now, special thanks to Hazel. Now, the truth is, I did kick this thing off about 2 years ago when the government announced their programme of commemoration. And the truth of it is, it's a bit like a relay. I limped halfway round the course, and then Hazel took the baton from my hand and sprinted triumphantly to the... Hazel's done an enormous amount, and I'm not being overly modest or overly generous. It wouldn't have happened otherwise, I can promise you. I'd like to thank everyone who chaired the meetings and all the stewards. I don't think we had to bounce anybody as far as I know. Everybody from York Against the Wall who helped over the months. I'll mention Alan Gerrard for the extra work he did on the York Against the War website. We've got him very busy. Andrew Collingwood, I don't think he was here today, and Graham Martin, who I saw briefly, for helping us with the ticket website. I'd like to thank York Alternative History and everyone else who helped with publicity. All kinds of people did there. Charlie Bridget Fairworld, Stephen Lewis at the Press, gave us half a page on Monday, Ellie Fiorentini at Radio York. And I'd like to also thank the people who provided the food for the contributors. Thanks, Val. It was the least we could do. So and people who provided tea, coffee, and all the rest of the stuff. So thanks ever so much. I think we need maybe three verses of Rule Britannia, then we can all.
Just a second. We haven't finished yet.
Chris.
Well, Steve has thanked Hazel, and, you know, living with Hazel, I know how much work and how much of our small two up two down house have been consumed by literature for this. I mean, she's done a fantastic job, absolutely amazing. But also, Steve's been very modest. It was Steve's initial idea, and it's been a driving force. Been absolutely fantastic. The pair of them together have done an absolutely brilliant job, which is testament to the fact that there's so many people here together. Very unexpectedly, I received a parcel during the week from Michael Gove. and he asked me quite specifically, having recounted on his previous remarks about the First World War, to give a couple of gifts on his behalf to Steve and Hazel. Have you come? This has nothing to do with me at all. This is Michael Gove's idea. He's asked me, remember, cheer for Michael Gove, shall we? This is for Michael Gove to Bogey. You need to open them and show them what you've got. We have arranged our microphones to be tied down in front of a DVD, and it's on a continuous loop for 24 hours until he's memorized every song. Up yours, Michael Gove. This is the answer. Thank you for coming and thank you for speaking.
Last bit, there's a plug across here for some excellent anti-war material, but a set of books and pamphlets. Yeah?
There's still some copies of the Lindsay's book there, and there's a couple of copies of Charlie McGuire's book, and this is a book which is absolutely fantastic to read. I told you everything you need to know. Have a glass of it today. And somebody mentioned John McClane, the book on John McClane, and then there's No Glory book that Lindsay mentioned, which is very nice and precise, and a new one from Stop the War, Iraq 3. So they're all here, so if you want to buy anything, please.
Yeah, and we've got white poppies for sale at the back. I think there's going to be some people going to the Golden Ball pub at the end. For if you don't drink, obviously you're not going to go. But thanks very much for coming.
If you don't drink,
that's it. Yeah.